Michael Tilson Thomas, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. What a beautiful surprise.
Well, and I understand we took you away from your vacation.
Yes, my studying and vacation, they're very often the same time, actually.
Well, it's hard to get a break, but we're really happy that you're here. Now, this program, is there a way to describe this program, the arc of the program, why Brahms and Berlioz, or what relationship they might have to each other?
Normally I would do that, but as I did not make this program, I feel I can disclaim all responsibility and just say it's two very great pieces, and they're both young men's pieces, basically. Both Berlioz and Brahms were young when they wrote these pieces, and they were very self-consciously designed to display their growing and audacious powers as composers.
Now, in the Berlioz Symphonie Fantastique, it's a self-portrait of the composer, who was 26 at the time. And the circumstances of its creation are also dramatic. And so it's like a story within a story. It's a piece of music where the story is especially important.
Yes, it is a programmatic symphony. It does follow also rules that symphonies are built by, you know, the kinds of movements and structural forms which exist in the movements. Very self-consciously in the mode of Beethoven, actually. But it does do some pretty wild things as well.
And he was inspired by his passion for a particular actress, Shakespearean actress?
Yes, Berlioz had attended a performance by an actress called Harriet Smithson. She was an Irish Shakespearean actress, and he saw her perform. He did not speak any English at all at the time, and he was also seated in perhaps the furthest away seat in the auditorium. So he got some impression of this woman on stage who, in those days, you can imagine, performed in a very melodramatic style. And he heard her in a sort of blurred, dim way. But somehow she made an indelible impression on him. I mean, she became an obsession for him. And for the next several years, all of his music was in some way or another involved in representing her or his passions for her.
And so this piece takes you through a range of emotions. Was it important to him that the audience knew the story as well?
Yes, Berlioz always insisted that there be a program, especially printed program, that was put on all the seats of the audience when they came in, which described the circumstances of the pieces been written, and also the program of the young artist who has been seized by these terrible dreads and miseries caused by his unrequited love for this ideal woman. And so it proceeds through episodes in his life in which she always haunts his dreams and everything else.
Does that story then inform the way you approach it when you're working with the orchestra?
Yes. I mean, in the largest sense, the way the piece is orchestrated, the way it's conceived, there's a lot of music in the treble register, which clearly represents Harriet Smithson, and that's all very lovely pastel kinds of colors and floating harmonies with little capricious touches. Lots of flutes and strings and clarinets and harp and everything. And then there's the kind of other side of the orchestra, the bass side of the orchestra, which represents the kind of stalker that is pursuing this young maiden. And there's a lot of very violent and rough gestures in the bass line, particularly obsessional things, certain gestures which you come to recognize as you know the piece better. There's a certain voice that comes back, which is this deep, threatening, on-the-brink voice.
In addition to being a great story, it's a very important symphony. It's been described as the epitome of romanticism.
Yeah, let's put it this way. It certainly showed that musical language, the emotional territory that Beethoven had been exploring, could be taken still further, that there was still more to be done there. Because there's nothing in the symphony that hasn't been done by Beethoven. I mean, there's a few special effects, orchestrational things that Beethoven didn't do. But basically the idea of a sort of programmatic symphony that alludes to violent things, in the case of Beethoven, a storm, in the case of Berlioz, these occult experiences. It was what Beethoven had done, but it was taken many steps further. And a lot of other people got on the same bandwagon.
There's such a variety in terms of emotion and sounds and the way he expresses emotions through different instruments. Was that new?
Yes, but many things were novel in the piece. Use some collegno strings, certain sort of ensemble for timpani in the end of the third movement, representing an offstage thunderstorm, but a thunderstorm in four parts.
What I'd love to talk about also is, it's great that you're here because you are all over the place, being in San Francisco and Miami and London, and that's just where you are in person. Then you're reaching audiences all over with the YouTube Symphony and the Keeping Score series. What philosophy drives your interest in technology and kind of pushing the limits there in classical music?
Well, I've always been interested in various kinds of technology since I was quite young. I mean, I was sort of pressed into service of technology and music when I was about 19 years old, and I was playing a series of performances of different versions of Stravinsky's Les Noces under the composer's direction. And these were being recorded for broadcast on television, but unfortunately the director that they had sent to do this did not know music, and so he was just hoping, like a sporting event, he'd be able to follow what was going on. Of course, that doesn't work so well in a piece like Stravinsky's Les Noces. But anyway, they had filmed two or three performances, and it was a disaster. They were going to throw it away. Somehow or another, someone suggested that, as I knew the piece quite well, that I might go to the editing room and try and see if it could be rescued. So it was an old editing room. It had Editech machines, very prim, at that time, the state-of-the-art multi-channel video editing machines. And there were all these performances with all these takes, most of which were not usable. But here and there, there was one that was usable. And so I contrived to make it complex edit with a certain amount of contrivance, actually, by doubling certain images and using sound beds that didn't necessarily come from what was being seen, but nonetheless worked. So that's the first time I did anything like that. And I thought, wow, this is really interesting, the way of representing music. And if one thought about this not from the point of rescuing it, but from the point of doing something creative with it, there's a lot that could be done. So that's kind of how I got started, and I never stopped.
In Miami, the New World Symphony Hall has a big screen so that when the orchestra is playing, people outside on the street can also listen to and watch the concert.
The concerts are projected on a 70 by 40 foot screen, which is one of the surfaces of the building. And when we give a concert, there are about 1,000 people inside the hall, and there'll be many more thousands outside in that park watching it.
That is so terrific.
It's become a social phenomenon, really transformed the community. It's really an event. People show up to it, families of all kinds, and they sit there, bless their hearts, listening to programs like Schubert, music from Rosamunde, Berg Violin Concerto, and Schumann Second Symphony. I mean, you think, there they all are in Miami Beach, sitting listening to this. Extraordinary.
You're doing so much, and you are so many places. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to come to Philadelphia. It's great to have you here.
I was so happy this opportunity arose because I love working with the orchestra, and it's the case and sometimes in classical music that our schedules are so far into the future. You think, oh, how can I find time for us to get lined up? And so this opportunity presented itself, and I thought, oh, this will be fun. We'll make some music, and I think that's what we're doing.
Well, I do hope you get a vacation eventually.
Yeah, next lifetime.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.